Okay, it's time to talk wheels. It's the Car Guy Show with automotive consumer tips, industry updates, interviews, and enthusiast news. If you care about cars, this show is for you. Now you're tuned in, so let's get tuned up with your host. Here he is, Steve Ford, the Car Guy.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Car Guys Show here, coming at you from the broadcast tower of News Talk 990 KTMS and at the speed of light on the World Wide Web. We're connecting you to automotive consumer and enthusiast news, insights, and interviews anywhere you're hearing our signal in Santa Barbara and the surrounding communities. In today's program, the automotive consumer and enthusiast topic we're going to put up on the lift is us. That's right. Any and all of us who drive cars, because just as the vehicle we drive is showcasing some of the most advanced technology that can be found on the planet, drivers remain one of the more complex challenges to make our roads safer for travel. Consider this news. Before California texting ban went into effect in January of 2009, about 1.4% of drivers were observed texting. Yet since this ban on texting, a survey by the Automobile Club of Southern California found that the proportion is now tripled to 4.1% of drivers texting. We're at a tipping point. Where do we go with distracted drivers today? And have you seen the latest billboards about the cost of a DUI? That should get your attention. The cost of just one DUI conviction today is now reported at $16,000. And if a driver is under 21, that figure jumps to $22,000. What do we need to know? Answers to these and other questions coming up straight ahead after the break. You're tuned in to the Car Guys Show on News Talk 990 KTMS Santa Barbara. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, you know about getting the job done right. If you want it done right, do it yourself. Well, that's what car and truck buffs, owners of classics, custom cars, and wise consumers know when they visit Daily Car Bath, Santa Barbara's downtown coin-operated car wash supercenter for more than 40 years. After discovering Daily Car Bath for my own cars, I've returned to give my machines the superior wash and cleaning care that all car buffs appreciate. At Daily Car Bath, you'll find premium hog's hair wash brushes with conditioned soft water and five stalls with foaming high-sudsing auto shampoo that literally floats debris off your vehicle's finish, along with consistent high-pressure washing and available non-acid low-pressure wheel and tire cleaner. And for that special finish, DI&I spot-free rinse to help dissolve and eliminate mineral spot, and spray wax formulated with clear coat protectant included in the cycle. See why Daily Car Bath is known as the place where customers send their friends. And take it from a fellow car buff. When it comes to the best in car care appearance, you'll find it all at Daily Car Bath, open 24 hours a day at the corner of Anna Kappa and Coda Streets. Quality, economy, and that showroom shine.
Auto Parts, may I help you?
Yeah, you stock serpentine belts?
Serpentine? What do you have, a snake under your hood? Parts counter, what's up?
Yeah, I need pads and rotors for an 02 Ford Mustang.
Pads and a distributor rotor? You mean pads and drums?
No, pads and rotors. I think I'll try a few more calls.
Larry's Auto Parts, Phil.
I'm looking for pads and front rotors for an 02 Mustang.
Okay, we stocked the pads. What's your concern on the rotors?
Sounds like the pads have just hit metal.
Well, bring them in and let's measure them. There's a good chance we can machine them for a fresh surface and save you money, too.
Well, yeah. Hey, what about windshield wipers?
Well, we stock wipers and we offer free installation. And in most cases, just the refills without buying the entire blade.
More than auto parts, more than service. Along with a national CarQuest brand. Expertise you experience every visit. Larry's 8-Day Auto Parts, Old Town Goleta, 964-3545. That's 964-3545.
I'm Larry's Auto Parts owner, Phil Unander. Our team is here to be your solution.
Okay, we're back with you and looking into the world of today's distracted drivers, that's us, with cell phones, texting, navigation, entertainment, not to mention those cars and intersections that are the focus of job one. To bring us wisdom, insights, and suggestions, let's go in and talk to Dr. Stephen Block from the Automobile Club of Southern California to demystify the distracted driver challenge.
We have vehicles that are much safer by their structural design, the passive and active safety features of cars today. But ironically, as cars are getting better, drivers seem to be getting worse. If you go out on the road today, you're dealing with drinkers. And then you said to me in kidding, you didn't mention drugs. And I mean, that compounds it on top of those other three. So now you've got a drinking, distracted driver, texting, taking medications, and drinking alcohol. And if they're over 90, they might be doing all those things, plus their eyesight and their speed and reactions may have already been compromised. Am I drawing a tough enough picture for the audience?
That's quite a picture.
Yeah.
There are other things out there, and let's not forget, as you were commenting, yeah. Prescription drugs are another major issue.
Sure. And interactions, even in well-intending people who don't even mean to be interacting or causing drug interactions, they might not even know it. Let me start with, right off the top, texting and manipulating devices while driving. The release that I received from your public relations department highlighted something that I think the audience can be really awakened by, and they're relatively aware of it by the media, or very acutely aware of it if they've read all the articles. But texting and manipulating electronic devices behind the wheel is nearly triple what it was before California's texting ban became law. And this is according to findings of the Automobile Club of Southern California's latest roadside driver survey. That proportion going up from January 2009, Dr. Block, that proportion is now nearly three times as high as it was before the ban. It's at 4.1% at any time. Please tell us your observations about that. How is it going up and why?
Well, the increase has been happening basically over the last 2 years or so.
Yeah.
Went from 1% up to about 4% in my surveys the last couple of years. Well, texting is exploding. Everybody knows that. It's easy and convenient when you text, and people are just doing it regularly.
So in the face of the law, you're saying the ban went in effect, and people are defiant of it. The ban was intended to reduce it, and it was maybe too little too late? Where do we go from here? It's going to get worse before it gets better, it sounds like.
Well, I certainly would agree with you that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Okay.
Number of texts that people send a day is astronomical. The average American sends 20 texts a day.
That's across the spectrum of age, and that's not just youth and school.
Yeah. It's basically taking all the texts and dividing by the population of the United States.
Crazy.
Up to 20 texts a day.
Yeah. Now, you're also noted in here, the study found overall that more than 1 in 10 drivers on the road, 10.4%, were driving distracted by using an electronic device while driving, handheld or hands-free cell phone, texting or manipulating a technical device. And that figure is up 16% compared to a year ago, and nearly double, up 96% from what it was 2 years ago. Now, I think the audience would feel like, you know, we know the texting thing's out there, so what's new? Have you heard or do you envision the potential for these devices to be inactive when they're in a vehicle because of the vehicle design or because of law enforcement? Or where is the line drawn at any hypothetical level? Or is there something in legislation and technology ahead that we should know about? What do you see?
Well, people are resistant to any sort of minor kind of fiddling with what they do in the car. So
right.
You tell people, hey, you know, there's an app out there that intercepts the call and says, hey, you know, I'm busy. Call me back later.
Right.
Or I'll get back to you later. Well, people don't like those. People don't use those. People aren't really thrilled about hands-free technology. They have really not taken that on. So people still find it much easier to use their handheld device rather than the hands-free device. So the hands-free device is still far in the minority from my study and other studies. We have a long way to go.
So we are moving in voice-activated technology. I can ask my phone to dial a number. I can have my phone write an email or a text message verbally. I'm still, of course, distracted if I do even those steps, even though I'm not touching the phone. That is an improvement, but it sounds like what you're saying is we're just not going to be moving fast enough, perhaps, to intercept the fact that people are going to have their hands on a device. So one hand on the wheel, one hand on the technology, and maybe two hands on the technology, it sounds like. Have you had any studies indicating how much time they're spending with no hands on the wheel?
It's really not, although it's really not so much an issue of people taking their hand off the wheel.
Okay.
People have a misperception of the fact that, oh, we really need to have two hands on the wheel. If that were the case, then we wouldn't have non-automatic transmissions.
Right.
People, you know, use their clutches.
Sure.
So putting your hands on the wheel is not the same thing as cognitively being involved in what's going on.
So it's a distraction. It's splitting attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Splitting attention. and the need to focus on what you're doing. There's actually a study out today having to do with hands-free texting. There was a study out about a year or two ago that I reviewed exhaustively. The study that just came out today, I haven't really had much of a chance to look at.
Right.
But both of them reaching similar conclusions.
Yeah.
Hands-free texting is not safe.
Now,
hands-free drive cell phone use is not safe.
So it's the cognitive. You said, let's back up, if we may, for a moment on that. To that extent that you are concentrating on the phone call, you're diverting attention from the car in front of you, the car behind you, the intersection with the light changing from green to yellow to red, what have you. Am I on track with that cognitive issue?
Oh, sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. If there are passengers in the car and people like to think that that's it might be a problem, but the people who are passengers in the car know what's going on outside, and they will stop talking.
Right.
Or they will tell you, oh, you know, there's a car pulling up on your side.
Right. You're merging
or
on the freeway.
Dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Okay.
But people also have this impression that they can do two things at once. The human brain did not evolve to do two things at once. Hunter-gatherers did not have to do two things at once.
Hunters and gatherers, the gatherers would be planting seeds and harvesting and what have you. So the hunter, doesn't the hunter sort of have to be like a race car driver and taking in a lot at high speed and comprehending many things at once, anticipating where to throw the spear with the timing of the animal that's running and all that? That's a lot. That's sort of multitasking, running, holding a spear. I'm kidding, but I'm kind of thinking the hunter is the distracted human, where the gatherer is the focused human. Fair to say?
Well, I think the hunter is still focused on the prey and focused on one basic thing. You can run pretty well,
right,
and hear pretty well, but you don't have to think about the kids' piano lessons this weekend.
Oh, good point. So myopic. You're focusing on...
You don't have to worry
the,
about other people who are about to throw a spear at you. That's pretty rare.
Okay.
But we really did not evolve to do two things.
One, I understand.
The brain is not capable of doing two things.
Yeah, the hunter's not texting while he or she is chasing the animal. Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so the brain's evolution really is not one that can focus on two things at once. We literally cannot focus on two things at once.
Okay.
We toggle tasks between various activities very quickly, and the brain basically loses a certain amount of ability by having to do two things at once.
Understood. Now, ironically, the computers that are sold, whether they're smartphones or laptops or PCs, offer increasing amounts of memory and speed to do multitasking and have many programs open. So seems like our culture and our society are embracing the whole concept of mashing as much in at once that the brain can comprehend. And sometimes people probably even forget, and I would be one of them, that you have a program open, and then you only discover when you go to shut your computer down or your phone down that you've got a program to close. So I'm sensitive to what you're saying, and I would ask you to tell us, if you would, what in the interim can you recommend to me and the audience listening about what to do inside of what we're dealing with? Are there some recommendations you put out when you speak to audiences or you write papers or what have you on where you see the best recommendations for dealing with technology in the car?
Well, basically, technology in the car is dangerous.
Yeah.
And people need to be aware of that. They need to put the cell phone down. They need to turn it off. They need to put it in their trunk. Some people can't handle the idea of it lying there and just buzzing. They're better off putting it in the trunk. But they are really deceiving themselves if they think that they are capable of doing something that other people can't. That's a common rationalization. Most people say, for example, that using a cell phone in the car is dangerous.
Yeah.
There was a study very recently of teens that showed that 84% of the teens knew it was dangerous to text and drive. 86% of them did it anyway. The human brain is if it's not very well designed to do two tasks at once, it is designed to do one thing very well, and that is rationalize bad behavior.
Wow, that's a profound point. Let me move over for a moment to you speak of the teens driving. We have enhanced teen licensing laws in California. The 2006 movement of the law went from, I guess it's AB 1474 requires that young drivers cease driving at 11 p.m., which is 1 hour earlier than required in the original Brady-Jarrett Teen Driver Safety Act that took effect in 1998. You speak of teen drivers, and I know for the folks out there that are not teenagers, they probably want to be cautious about their kids who are teenagers, and then alternatively, if they don't have teenagers, just driving on the road with teenagers. And then the teenagers who might be to hear this show might appreciate that we've all been there. And, you know, you got to start somewhere. You have to go out on the road and learn to manage the car, hit the brakes, steer, use the mirrors, respect the laws and what have you. But you complicate that when you then add the texting and what have you. So, but I do have to say, on an optimistic level, that even if the driving is limited to 11 p.m. rather than midnight, we're making it so that the teen drivers are able to get the driver's license, as opposed to just eliminating the 16-year-old option at 18.
Full license at 18.
Okay.
You could also get one after 1 year of being a provisional license.
Excellent. Now, according to your information, the review of AB 1474, which went into effect January 1st, 2006, looked at fatal injury crashes where novice 16-year-old drivers were at fault. During 11 p.m. to midnight, these crashes fell 34% in 06 and 07 combined compared to the two prior years. In Los Angeles County, from 11 p.m. to midnight, these crashes fell even more, nearly 50%. So your conclusion on that would be some of this legislation is working.
Yeah, I think the nighttime driving restriction has been very effective in reducing crashes. There's also, people should know that there's now a movement to 10 p.m.
Yeah.
And that bill, which is AB 1113, just got out of Transportation Committee just this past week, and that is trying to follow the federal dictates. The federal government has passed its transportation bill for the year, and in there, there's also requirements and suggestions for states having to do with teen licensing, and one of them is to move the nighttime restriction to 10 p.m.
So that's probably not exciting, certainly not exciting for teenagers, and moderately interesting for anybody else listening, but notable from the safety standpoint that teen drivers need to have the opportunity to progress into managing a motor vehicle, truck, car, motorcycle. But the late night restrictions have to do with sort of just whether they're partying or what's going on late at night, that may go to 10 p.m. in California. When's that decided, Dr. Block?
Well, it's in the legislature now.
Yeah.
It got out of committee pretty well, but that's just the first of the committees.
Yeah.
I think it has a good chance because the federal government is supporting it,
yeah.
And I suspect that if I had to guess, I'm not sure I'm supposed to, but
yeah.
If I had to guess, I think it will. I think it will go through. I think the support is there.
Yeah. Well, a guy with a PhD who studies this kind of stuff I'd give you a credit for an educated guess on that one. By the way, your undergraduate degree is in sociology.
Correct.
Okay. And you? Where'd
as
you go?
Was my,
yeah.
As was my graduate degree.
Okay. And you went to USC for your PhD.
Yeah.
Kind of cool because you're right down at, you know, your main offices are right by USC in Los Angeles, right?
Oh, yeah, I spent a lot of time in downtown Los Angeles.
Yeah. It's a handsome structure, if anybody can picture it, if you've driven around downtown Los Angeles on Figueroa, you drive by a landmark.
State historic landmark.
Yeah.
It's quite a beautiful building.
It is. Corner of what? Figueroa and what?
Adams.
Yeah, beautiful structure. Well, let me just tease what we're going to come back to after a break here, because I want the audience to stay with us and hear something that's another, maybe perhaps as profound, if not more profound, piece of information we're going to focus on for a moment with Dr. Block, and that is that you've seen billboards about the cost of a drunk driving conviction?
Conviction.
Yeah. The reality is that these billboards, if you've seen them around Southern California or wherever you might have driven, they reference a $10,000 cost. And according to information from the Automobile Club of Southern California, first offense DUI conviction now can cost as much as almost $16,000. What I find notable is that it can cost, if you're under 21, a first offense misdemeanor DUI is as much as $22,492. Those numbers need to be defined a bit, and that's what we're going to do when we come back to help people understand how could it be like that, and how do we get the word out to have people understand the magnified issue that is otherwise, you know, sometimes just people think it's a DUI conviction. They don't know the numbers behind it. Does that work for you, Dr. Block?
That's great.
Okay, we'll come back and address that. You're tuned into the Car Guy Show on News Talk 990 KTMS. I'm Steve Ford. We'll be right back after these messages.
In the old-time movies, you used to see an automobile junkyard as a place with rusty old wrecks and big cranes scrapping obsolete machines. Those days were black and white, and today's a world of digital full color. And in the new era of the green car, Steelhead Auto Recycling is at the leading edge of used auto parts. As new and future cars approach 100% recyclability, more than 70% of even older car and truck parts find new life as they come back in service at Steelhead Auto Recyclers, which means huge savings for you. You'll save on major parts such as engine engines and transmissions. But you can also repair and refresh your wheels with money-saving body trim and accessory parts, from hubcaps to glass, doors, fenders, taillights, and accessories. With a full-service counter and national parts search power and the new self-service section at Steelhead Auto Recycling, you'll save both ways. Plus the security of a full 90-day warranty on all parts. Digital on the web at myused.net or analog by phone at 683-8557. That's 683-8557. Steelhead Auto Recycling.
When it comes to keeping your wheels looking like new, whether you're a passionate car buff or a daily commuter who simply seeks the best in value and integrity, there's a name in Santa Barbara that fits both profiles. Tri-County Auto Glass. Today's auto glass installers all have to service more sophisticated and precise automobiles than just a decade ago. And while the majority of auto glass businesses have state-of-the-art tools and equipment, what we all know is harder to find are the industry-certified craftspeople and the highest levels of customer service, which is why Tri-County Glass customers range from Concord Elegance level show car owners to everyday family sedan and pickup truck owners. Rock chip repairs or glass replacement with lifetime repair credit and 30 years in Santa Barbara, while a positive word of mouth reputation may bring you in, courtesy, quality, and that new window glass shine will bring you back. Tri-County Auto Glass, downtown Santa Barbara. Call them or stop in for a quote on a window repair or replacement today. 963-6200. That's 963-6200.
I'm Scott Budo, owner, manager, and a certified auto glass technician. At Tri-County Auto Glass, we are about quality, safety, and value.
Change your life in a big way.
Everybody needs a big brother or a big sister. And Ben, he plays football with me and we like to do things like that. He's my best friend. Whenever he comes over to my house, he feels like he's a part of my family. I feel like I'm a part of his family too.
Volunteer or donate to Big Brothers Big Sisters. We need bigs, especially men. Start something. If you're a former big, start something again at BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
And we are back with you here talking with Dr. Stephen Block, PhD, of course, with that title, Dr. Block, from the Automobile Club of Southern California. Dr. Block, we're tuned in right now talking about the topic of texting, and we talked about teen drivers. And before I went out to the break, I talked about the DUI challenge for folks to understand these numbers. I said when we come back, we'll define these numbers. A first offense, driving under the influence conviction, now costs $15,649. And for an under 21 first offense misdemeanor DUI, it's $22,492. Can you enlighten us about the realities of those numbers? Or for folks listening, is this exaggerated? I mean, is this the reality? I imagine it is. You wouldn't have published it otherwise. Expand on that if you would.
Yeah, the costs can vary a great deal. I mean, there are some fees and fines that you can't get out of. What people may hear occasionally is that, oh, you know, the fine for a DUI conviction is $390.
Yeah.
What they're not aware of is the fact that the penalty assessments that have gone on to have been attached to fines in California have been escalating very rapidly. But that's the way that the government gets its money. You know, can't raise taxes, so it punishes people who violated some sort of a law. So the penalties attached to $390 is $1,245. So your penalties are actually three times higher than just the fine.
That's an interesting twist on the circumstance. You're saying once legislation passes with a particular amount of money attached to the charge, these penalties sound almost arbitrary. What's the legislation process? How does that work? The penalties they can be changed at will by what branch of government? By what process?
Well, they're changed by the county.
Okay.
So the state doesn't have to change them. The state makes some recommendations.
Okay.
Some guidelines to the counties, and the counties get to basically make their own decisions. So it will vary. The costs will vary by county.
Okay.
But the costs are just kind of amazing. So occasionally people will hear that distracted driving citation is $20.
Right.
What they don't think about is that when you actually go to pay it, it's going to cost you about $146.
So there are county charges added on, and depending on the county, you have the citation.
Yeah, fees that are added on that makes it wind up costing you seven times what you might have thought it would cost you.
Sure. Okay. Plus your insurance costs.
Speeding fine. Most speeding fines are $100, but when you get through the court, you're probably going to be paying about $500. So those are pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the government loves adding on all sorts of other things.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got alcohol education classes for drinking and driving.
Right.
You have a victim restitution fund that, you know, you're going to have to throw in $140 for that.
Yeah.
The DMV wants some money when you get your license back.
There's fees at every turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that localities can charge booking and fingerprinting fees.
Yeah.
You have to pay for your own fingerprints.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of an astonishing array of things. Vehicle towing. To get your car towed.
It's into impounding. They're impounding.
Taking it from you.
Yeah.
And you say, well, gee, I don't really want you to take my car. They go, well, that's too bad, but we're not only going to take it, we're going to charge you for it.
Right. I mean, that's,
the
reality. Now, the Automobile Club developed its estimate for the price of a first offense misdemeanor DUI conviction in California by totaling up mandated state and local fines, penalties, restitution, and other legal fees, and adding them to estimated attorney and increased insurance costs. Now, those things I think people would appreciate that they can think up themselves. But here's a notable item. That figure is up almost 30% from 2011, largely due to a 37% increase in auto insurance and state and county fees and penalties, according to the analysis. So it sounds like you're revealing in this report that the penalties are almost opportunistic by counties to pick up extra money when you break the law in their county.
Sure.
Okay.
There's also a push to lower insurance costs. So
yep.
That's taken very seriously by insurance companies.
Yeah.
So you lower the insurance costs and you punish the people who violate the law.
Yeah.
And so it's not insurance costs that are going up for the public. It's when you are receiving citations and violations and being arrested, those kinds of punishments are going up.
It doesn't sound real encouraging for having that extra drink and you're depending on your body weight and what you should know about being aware of where the line is drawn if you get pulled over and you're cited. Now,
those, you know, $15,000 doesn't really fully do it for explaining what it can cost you.
Yeah.
For example, the civil liability. Somebody can sue you if you're in a crash.
Yeah.
The state's imposing ignition interlocks, the devices.
That you pay for the installation and all that. It's going to be
you pay for that.
What's that cost? What does an interlock cost, just for folks out there that might not have had to deal with it? And hopefully won't have to. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very good at getting money from you, too.
Yeah.
They'll charge you about $70 a month for the device.
But
then there are installation costs.
Yeah.
There is verification that the device is working properly costs.
So at the end of a year, you're spending, let's see.
$1,000, $1,200, something
like
that.
Okay, and you don't even own it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you're leasing
it. You don't get to own that.
Okay. An interlock can be required for quite a variable, or is it kind of a predictable thing? Is an interlock, when it's required, is it for a year, 2 years? What's a typical imposed?
A year is typical.
Okay.
It's mandated completely for all offenders in four counties, which includes Los Angeles County.
Now, we're in Santa Barbara, Ventura, this area?
Not mandated there. Yeah. Basically, what they're doing is testing the system, and so they've mandated it for four counties so they could study the effects of the device.
It could be coming, folks, is what you're saying, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
it's for second offenders.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is supposed to be mandated for second offenders.
Got it.
For first offenders, it may well be coming. It has been. The use of ignition interlocks has been spreading rather dramatically across the United States.
And that's a breath-activated system?
Correct.
Okay,
yeah.
So you've got to breathe into something.
Blow into it.
Yeah. Of course, that's not going to be good to go out to lunch with your fellow workers to have a interlock on your steering wheel, right? I mean, you know, let's not take my car is what you might be saying if you have to have one of those, right? I mean, it's right there. Every time you start the car, you've got to breathe into that thing.
Yeah, not only that, but after you've been driving for a few minutes, it's probably going to ask you for a retest just to make sure that somebody else didn't breathe into it. So pulling over to the side of the road and having to blow into it doesn't look all that impressive, especially with your date.
Tough stuff. The fact that we have better cars, safer cars, better roads. Obviously, the economy's caused some limitation on potholes being fixed and things like that. But what's the optimism for tomorrow? Let's send everyone out on a positive note here. You know, the sobering, no pun, I guess I should say pun intended, the sobering news is we're getting better in the car world, but as drivers, would you say I'm being a pessimist or calling it as it is, Dr. Block? We're becoming less competent because of our own activities and our own inclinations. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
The cars are becoming safer, the roads are becoming safer, and I think we're in this kind of a funny period here
yeah.
where we've introduced all these new toys.
Yeah.
And I like to think of them as toys because people love toys.
Yeah.
And we're putting them on cars. We really don't know what the effects are. And that's kind of an exciting period for researchers because there's just so many new toys out there and we just don't know much about them. We don't know that much about GPS devices and what kind of effect they'll have. Government's kind of trying to come out with regulations and these various things.
Sure.
So there's all sorts of things that we don't know. I think in the long run, I think we would be moving to a driverless car, and 20 years from now, somebody wants to call back in and say, that Dr. Block 20 years ago, he told me we'd be moving to a driverless car, and that will reduce the dangers out there.
Well, I love
traffic crash rates are going down, and so that. Well, while people are, you know, nervous about all the things going out on the road, traffic crash rates are dropping fairly sharply.
Good,
they have
good.
Been for a long time.
That's wonderful news. And, of course, at the same time, cars are some of the technology that's in the automobiles, thankful to the automakers, include many devices that help compensate, unfortunately and likely not enough fast enough, but things that help drivers to know about safety, alert them whether they're driving too close or there's an object behind them or in front of them that should be notable, and nighttime driving and better lighting and what have you. So I'm really thankful that the technology is speeding forward in a positive way, but as we're driving down the road, we don't want to be distracted to death. And so Dr. Stephen Block from the Automobile Club of Southern California, thank you for taking us inside this world a little bit to reveal some of the reality behind these numbers, whether the cost of the DUI or the costs of teen drivers who might be driving too late at night. And of course, all of us at every age, distracted drivers, whether teen, middle-aged or senior citizens, adding alcohol and distraction on top of that, we've got a dicey brew to drive through ahead. Make sense?
Makes sense. It's a fascinating field, and people sometimes should listen to the research because it's not just that it tells them something about safety, but it's also just pretty fascinating, telling us a lot about people.
Yeah.
And that, and they're the most complicated thing out there on the road.
Yeah.
It's not the cars. It's not the technology.
Yeah.
It's the people.
Yeah.
People are the cause of about 90% of the crashes out there.
Yeah.
And
we can do better.
Oh,
right?
So much.
Yeah. We can do better. Dr. Stephen Block, you are terrific for taking time on behalf of the Automobile Club of Southern California. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
And thank you all for joining us for this segment on the World of Wheels. And this brings us to the close of another visit with all of you here on the Car Guys Show. Join us here again next week for another segment from the Coastal Riviera right here in Santa Barbara on News Talk 990 KTMS and video travels at thecarguy.com. Keeping you car wise, I'm Steve Ford, the Car Guy.